Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up, what up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name is Nick Engvall. I'm here with my guys Robbie and Mike. What's going on, fellas?
What's going on, man? I'm happy to be here on Thursday. Let's get down to business with these sneakers.
I'm doing great. I'm about to quit my job. Listen to this.
Yeah, hopefully nobody's listening. Hey, when it's time to go, it's time to go, you know?
Right. I already got the new gig. I've got to pass my background. And last time I checked, I am who I said I am. I don't have any prereqs. So I'm good. Let's put it that way. I'm good. That's good.
Nice, man. Congrats.
Well, there you go. Congrats.
Can't wait.
So we got a pretty good topic tonight. But before we get into it, I wanted to shout out. Let's see, Matt Shoe 23 left us a review on iTunes, and we just appreciate you guys taking the time to leave a review. It's basically the only way that we can kind of see that we're growing and reach new people and continue expanding like the conversation and the community that we're trying to build here around the podcast. So thank you for taking the time to leave us a review. And if you do, obviously iTunes is the best place for that. If not, just leave us a comment on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, wherever. We're all over the place. Yeah. Anything else for that, guys?
Shoot. No, just keep on listening, guys. You guys are the reason we do it. We appreciate all the comments that help us be better every day. So thank you.
Keep on keeping on. Joe Dirt.
So before
you guys aren't sure, awesome, but you know,
Joe Dirt's kind of like a low key classic, though, right? It's like one of those. I feel like any movie that has Rob Schneider in it somehow is like better than expected. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can be saying with that.
It just always has that like weird cameo slash, I mean, I don't know, like, I forget what the movie was that he was like the lead character in, which I don't know if that's the right place for him, but anyway, it's a little off topic.
Chris Rock's greatest role as a thespian, I'm just gonna like put that out there. Christopher Walken.
Which one?
Christopher Walken. He's like the guy that's in like witness protection.
Oh yeah,
and, then something happens. Maybe nice. Inside when you hear that, we're trying to keep it PG-13 at the least. But check it. Yeah.
All right. So before we get into the main story. A couple of news things. Obviously, Robbie, you brought up that Foamposite mismatched uppers thing. I'm gonna let you talk about it, and then I'm gonna let Mike argue his point.
So I was minding my own business, looking through the sneaker websites, and then I almost throw up. And I'm like, "Why is there this in my mouth?" Like Nike and the Foamposite are one of the most just like brain can like it bottles my brain. I forgot what movie that's from, but it's mind-bottling. I want to say it's Anchorman, maybe, but that's besides the point. It's just like, it confuses me so much why they keep trying to push new iterations of the Foamposite, that it is obvious grasps at whatever might still be growing from that tree. Like, all white Foamposite, I've never understood white Foamposite, this period. Like, why is it white? It holds color very well, does reflection very well, it does metallic, it does so many things well. All white just kills its vibe. Then you have like this leather piping on it, like leather trim, that looks just wrong. You have Foamposites with denim, you have Foamposites with like soft material on them, you have Foamposites like wrapped like a car that you can just peel off. I think the Spider-Man's you could peel off, and a couple like the Weatherman's you could peel off, all of the print, and it's just like a blank Foamposite underneath. Like, maybe I'm a purist, but I only want to see Foamposites from like 2012 to like 97. That's like the only Foamposites that should ever come out again. And I'm not for it. Mike, you had a different opinion than I. Oh, I'm noticing too, it has double pull tabs. So this USA one has double pull tab on the back and the front. Like, why? Why? Oh. Now, like double midsoles, double swooshes. I mean, have like double, there already are double outsoles where it's like stacked on top of another shoe. And we have that lined up later for the conversation.
That's a different conversation.
Yeah. It's just like, man, why are you poking the bear? Why do you gotta, it's perfect. You're messing with a perfect shoe.
All right. So to start the conversation, look, I completely understand. Like, my favorite Foamposites are definitely some of the older ones. Mine may not be some of the, you know, the hype pairs ever, but like my favorite pairs are like the cough drops, of course the Royals, and then the Dr. Dooms. But you gotta understand, I am a sucker for two things. One, USA inspired, like Nike sportswear, and two, anything that goes along with any kind of World Cup. And so I'm looking at, I feel like the story's been different on these a bunch of times, because initially, I heard this was the only a ladies-only release in honor of the Women's World Cup, the USA Women's National Team. And, I mean, soccer is one of my favorite sports. This is, I like phones. I don't own any pairs, but I respect the design, respect the, you know, the longevity of the sneaker. And I think it's kind of cool. It's a pretty clean colorway. I mean, we have a million phones come out every year. I can say that this one has at least been done in a way that's wearable, and like some of these other random ones, like the chrome Foamposites, like you mentioned, that peel off if the sun hits it just right. You're going to be down to just whatever the bare colors underneath it. But I don't know, man. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Definitely different. And this goes against, you know, something I talked about in an earlier episode about me and mismatched shoes. But, you know, one side has the white and blue, one side is repping a white and red, double pull tab. I can't hate it, man. I don't know what it is. I just can't hate it. I like it.
Let me ask you this. So, and this is a woman's shoe in this example. So, yeah. Let's say it comes in men's sizing. If you put this Foamposite next to, like, an eggplant or a Varsity Royal or even this, like, the Turbo Green, there's so many options. But, like, next to that, which one are you going with?
I mean, okay. I'm clearly going with one of the originals, because that is just, those are timeless, man. It's just, I don't have any complaints about this one. I should say like this. I'm not going to buy it, because A is lady size and B is $230. But I like the shoe. I like to look at it. I think it's kind of cool. But like, if my wife decides to buy it, I'd be okay with that.
If you had any Foamposite of the past 2 years and an original Varsity Royal, would you take any of like 30, any of the 30 tries they've attempted? Would you take any of those 30 over the one original?
You know, the messed up part is I'm trying to think of all 30 that came out last year.
Money isn't a thing. It's just total
pressure. No, I got you. I'm really just trying to think of anything that was like kind of worth purchasing last year. The foam pod.
The Wu-Tang. Okay, the Wu-Tang foam pod.
Nah, yeah, I mean, I like that one, but I still go to like the original eggplant.
Nick, how about you? Are you buying any of the newer Foamposites if price isn't an option? Because the price is crazy. If there isn't a price thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm going... It's tough because for me, it would be Royals, obviously, at the top. Probably eggplants behind that. Maybe the Copper Foams. There's a cool story there, connection to Penny and all that. But I think, you know, one, to your point about white foams, the only ones I really ever wanted to see were like the ones that Penny wore, right? And I think those came out maybe in like, were they in a Shooting Stars pack or something? I can't remember.
Kind of, but they put the print on it.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, like that's really the only ones. I mean, and anything since then, I mean, as much as I love foams, they're not comfortable. I don't live in a place where I need to wear boots. So like I haven't worn foam since I lived in New York. And you know, like to me, it's not really on my radar unless there's something that's really, really good. And this one to me isn't really it. I don't like the split colors. I don't like the split colors on the foam, on any of the foams to begin with. But I don't like the two different colors on the shoes either. I don't know. Like, I mean, I think it's fine that they try stuff, but I think you mentioned before we started recording, I think it would be much cooler to see them try different types of, you know, foam based or, you know, shoes from that era. Even like, I mean, even just like Dunkin's, you know, like,
dude, I love the Dunk.
Something that we haven't seen for a while. Yeah. I feel like, you know, to your point, like, you know, whatever it's been 20, 30, 40 pairs in the past couple of years has just been like overkill. And I don't see any of them really being like that popular. It seems like most of them.
Like there was the whole Galaxy alternate from the All-Star. Nobody like then like came and went. You have another All-Star Foamposite Pro that had removable swooshes. Nobody cares. You had a fish one, abalone. You had the straight up Gone Fishing. Then you had abalone. Then you had a really, really cruddy, like metallic, was literally like a metallic silver.
That chrome one. It peeled, man. It literally fell apart. Really it wore for a couple times.
But what they about the black. Supreme collab?
Well, you stop Supreme one, everyone's going to buy it. I mean, you couldn't stop that monster.
The Oregon Duck one, but Nick, on your point on the Total Air Foamposite Pro, I worked at Foot Locker when those came out, and maybe it's because I lived in Las Vegas, and that shoe has no place in 120-degree weather, but that thing sat, like, I think by the time we shipped them out of the store, they were on sale for, like, $75, and that was, like, $280 retro. Like, it was something stupid.
Yeah.
I bought the blacked out pair, the triple black, the Total Foamposite for, I want to say $89, and I sold them for like $200.
Well, that's a come up. That's just a red form.
I kind of upset. I didn't keep them because the price is now on like StockX and GOAT and everything is stupid high. I'm like, crap.
That's time between releases, not popularity of the release in my book. Like,
That's fair. You're right. So they haven't come out since, 2012?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only ones I think that were actually kind of interesting, I thought the hologram ones, like, kind of looked cool. I thought the Knicks colorway was pretty good. Obviously, if you do, like, the Carolina one was pretty decent. Not stuff that I would buy, but, like, even, like, the Tianjin one, the Paranorman story was dope. Like, all those things were cool, but I don't need to see, like, the crazy stuff printed on foams. Like, it still doesn't make the shoe any better to me than what the Royals or, like, an all-black or an all-white would be.
The Tianjin is, like, an $8,000, $10,000 shoe. And, like, that is the pattern, screen-printed, whatever you want to call it, that is the Foamposite. And we just have to forever live with knowing that there's like a couple hundred pairs in existence and we'll never have them. And all are these like crumbs. It's like, oh, here's literally crumbs of an idea. Like, oh, this works. We're going to keep it on hold. Here's some like little shits. Like, here's this.
Well, I think phones should go back in the vault and go back to being regionalized for a while, because at first we weren't getting them everywhere. Then we started getting them way too many places. Like, just like Nick said, I may be the only one in this group that likes this, but that doesn't mean I'm going to buy them by any means. But I think they need to go back into the vault for a while, build some scarcity around them, and just have some better ideas when they come back out in about 5 years. Just because right now they're pumping them out like freaking monarchs, and I'm like, dude, just stop putting bad ideas out there. But I just happen to like this one. I told you, USA colorways, Olympic style, you know, national team style. I'm a sucker for it all the time.
There was a straight up Olympic foamposite from 2018. Like,
I loved them. Didn't get them though.
Tripping.
Ugly.
All right, so switching up, next news topic, this ZoomX Vista Grind. I feel like Robbie's just going to hop in with the tripping right off the bat with these.
I'm going to join in this time. I'm joining in with this.
I feel like Cher's dad from Clueless, like Cher. So she was atrocious. That's kind of like Bernie Sanders, too. Like, that's weird.
Bernie Sanders.
Imagine Bernie Sanders playing Cher's dad from Clueless. If you're old enough to know that movie, that'd be so funny.
Oh my God.
But then Cher walking in wearing these shoes, and Paul Rudd being like, "I'm Paul Rudd, love me, America." I don't know.
To be fair, Kate Bush just came out with a Clueless collaboration about a month ago. So,
yeah. Under the radar.
Yeah, it was super under the radar. I don't know if it was a Foot Locker exclusive, but that's beside the point. It happened.
Yeah, it had like the print from the skirts, right? Like the plaid print. Whatever.
Yeah, that yellow
yeah.
print. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. So this ZoomX Vista is really interesting. It's basically like, I don't know, it looks like the upper kind of a React Element 87 to me, and then some like massively chunky midsole. I don't know. It's not for me by any means.
It's not for anybody. No one should wear this.
Retire it.
It looks like it's a hazard. Like, if you walk and roll the wrong way, I feel like you're just too Nike for some kind of damage.
I mean, that's like the trend right now, though, with, you know, so many of these chunky shoes is, like, dangerous.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. I mean, okay, for the world out there who doesn't know, like, don't know who I am and haven't seen me, I'm 5'8". If I put these things on, I'd be 6'1", easily.
Man heels. Like the Air Max 2000 straight up heels.
How much are these things? I haven't seen a price yet. You guys see?
I didn't see a price on it.
I'm guessing they'll probably be the same as like ZoomFly SPs, probably around that 160, 180 mark, you know? Because what it has ZoomX in it, so you're going to be paying for that.
Yeah.
Which is crazy for ZoomX to be in such a lifestyle shoe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, hopefully they don't try to twist this as a performance shoe, because it definitely doesn't.
God,
like
no one running this, please. You will hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Correct.
So I think that's enough. I feel like we're bashing on new releases, so we'll just all end up buying the same Jordan 1s this weekend and feel good about ourselves.
Can I get a quick little aside?
Yep.
I just, like, we were talking about Swaggy P last week, and I'm trying to buy some of his clothing, like the Most Hated Player, because that stuff is fresh. Like, Nick Young's clothing line is really dope, and it's all sold out. Every item. It's like,
really?
Not sold out. So Nick Young, man, hook us all up with the Most Hated shorts, because these things are tight. Like, Nick Young rocks. Nick Young for president. Democratic Convention 2019. What's up?
Well, Swagger P, we're here for the shorts, man.
Yeah.
So you know we are. You know where to find us.
They have the Golden. He's still like running off the Golden State Warriors championship he won. Hey. They don't have the trophy on them, but they're fresh. I mean, yeah. I'll post a picture on Sneaker History. Maybe he'll restock them. He won't, but it'd be cool.
Tag him a million times.
Yeah. If I was to win a NBA Finals, like, you best believe I'd be like wearing the same, like I'd be wearing the same thing every day, just because. Like, yep. There's only like,
oh yeah,
like 100 dudes in the history of humanity to actually do that, or whatever the number is. I don't blame him.
I'm right along with you. I tell everybody day. I wear the uniform every day.
All right. Does J.R. Smith have a shirt on yet? I'm playing.
The funny thing is, like, I mean,
he ain't playing basketball. Go ahead, Nate.
Oh, he's about to sign with the Lakers, man.
That's exactly what I was about to say. He's got to be in your hometown, Robert.
Bring that swag. Like, we need, like, people hated, like, the people we signed last year, a.k.a. Beasley, Rondo, Lance, JaVale. I love crazy. Like, Ron Artest is one of my favorite players ever. Like, I love me crazy in the NBA. So, like, I would happily take some J.R. Smith. As long as he doesn't have any important moments, like the NBA Finals, like passing the ball out when you have the rebound underneath the hoop. But, like, in certain situations, just let him come out, wear a Supreme armband, and just give the crowd what they want, you know?
Well, I mean, to be fair, you guys need him since you have four players on your roster right now.
Yeah.
If you sign them, they will come. Like, if you know what movie that is.
Hey, but at this rate, the Lakers will actually possibly throw me like a $20 contract just to stay under the cap, right? So under the luxury tax. So yeah, I'll ride the bench. I'll just post to Instagram. Post to Twitter the whole game. Live tweet the games from the bench.
Let's go. Dude, we're getting sponsored by the Lakers. We're going to be all on the team on the bench, live streaming. Let's go.
Actually, so to kind of keep the conversation organically pivoting in weird directions, we didn't really feel the Giannis, at least Mike, you liked it a little bit in hand.
I didn't like it in hand. No, it felt cheap. So like I'm not a big person. I feel like if I pivot the wrong way, it might blow up.
Hey, that's what I was getting to. We've now seen two or three colorways in official images, not just somebody's in hand in the back of a store. Are we still thinking that they don't look good? Have our opinions changed on the Giannis at all?
Yeah, I switched. I switched to the Don one. I've officially switched opinions from the episode we did about that one versus Giannis' shoe, because I've seen pictures of Don one more release pictures, and that one looks super fresh compared to what I've seen with the freak one or whatever the heck they're calling it.
See,
I would agree.
I really like the orange colorway now that I'm seeing like the official pictures of it. Plus, it's only $120.
The color's fire. The color's fire. I when I held it in hand at the particular finish line I was at, I don't know if they were just showing it off to the customers or getting ready to stock it, but I held it in hand and it reminded me of the material. The upper reminded me of like the Tangune, like you know, like the cheap Nike shoe
that's
the highest selling shoe. It reminded me of that. And again, maybe if I play in it, it'd be something different. Maybe it's light on purpose, but man, I just wasn't a fan. And right now I'm leaning more towards the Donovan Mitchell signature. It looks like it's a little bit sturdier, a little bit better materials than Giannis.
I was going to say, I really do appreciate that both of these shoes coming out, signature shoes coming out at like, what, 120, 110, 120, something like that?
Oh, heck yeah. Dude, I appreciate that too.
So that's what I was about to say. You brought up the price point. So to be honest, it looks a lot like a fusion of two basketball shoes. So you have the Hyper Live, which it's like from 2015, it's like the last shoe Paul George kind of wore before he transitioned to his own shoe. But the midsole and the overall construction looks a lot like the Greek Freak. And the last shoe, well, the second to last shoe James Harden wore at Nike was called the Run the One.
Yep.
And that looks, it had the same kind of finger trap, not, it's definitely not fly wire, but these like a finger trap type V construction around like the base of the laces to have lockdown around like the medial and lateral like forefoot area. And the Greek Freak borrows both of those. And those shoes were both really under the radar and extremely good performers. Like, if you wanted to go get your son or daughter a basketball shoe to play high school in, and you didn't want to spend signature money, they were both fantastic options. Shout out to the homeless person that stole my James Harden Run the Ones out of my car one time. But he can have them. He needed them. But like, they're both mega cheap, lacking a lot of the bells and whistles, but still has everything you need to be a safe, functional basketball shoe. And on that last point, if you look up the design inspiration behind the Giannis, it's a really cool thing that I never noticed until I saw the picture in this drawing. But if you put like a human hand and wrap it around your foot, like right hand or right foot, it grips around your forefoot, and the Giannis is kind of set up to have those finger trap type, you know, things I was just talking about, the V's to hold the, you know, make the shoe more stable. So yeah, it's like a human hand, and there's five fingers for him and his four brothers and his dad.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So like, that's cool. You can't tell that story unless they do a really cool, like they draw a hand on top. That'd be dope. But there's little nuances that are making me like it more. I'm still on the fence about whether I'd ever get it, but it's very affordable and it's a great option from somebody who didn't grow up with a lot of money in Greece and is paying it forward to kids trying to buy his shoe. So that's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I respect the pricing of them completely. I'm glad that they're doing that. That's one of the reasons I like the Kyrie's, and again, the Paul George is there. They're not gouging kids. They're not, because I mean, that's his line. I'm, you know, it's mostly towards, you know, kids, teenagers playing ball, and I definitely respect that because they remember that, hey, when I was growing up, I may not have had that much cash. My parents may not have had that much cash, but I can still get something pretty cool now. So, if anything else, I respect that.
Like, kids like Giannis. Giannis is like, he's entertaining. He's useful. Oh, yeah. He's more popular with kids than LeBron. LeBron's cooler with. So it's just winning without maybe being the prettiest girl at the ball.
Yeah, it reminds me of you know, KD's line, right? When KD started with his signature line, his whole thing was he was going to keep it under $100. And, you know, obviously that didn't happen. But I would love to see both these guys. So I just want to make the correction. Like, I was looking it up. The Freak one from Nike, Giannis' shoe, is going to be $120. And then the Don issue one, which is Donovan Mitchell's shoe with Adidas, is $100. And
oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, and that shoe looks really great for $100. So, like, I'll probably pick up a couple of the colorways. Like, there's a few pretty good ones already on both of those shoes, in my opinion, at that price. And if they were to go on sale, I think it's like a no brainer for me. But yeah, I agree with both of you guys on like I think the fact that they're looking at the price point, you know, for the future, the youth, the way all of this sets the tone for moving forward, right? It's one thing if you start your signature line at $160 and now 10 years in, the only way you can continue to add, you know, technology to it or justify, you know, the new factor of it is, you know, raising the price up another $100. It kind of like just sucks in the long run for the kids that just want to play basketball in the shoes and not, you know, the people trying to resell the stuff. But
yeah.
Giannis like Trick Daddy. He loved the kids.
Exactly.
Trick Daddy, come on the show.
Yeah.
Everybody should follow Trick Daddy on Instagram. He's kid friendly. But he's funny. Like, okay, so I'm sorry. Nick, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, since we're talking money, we should probably just switch over and transition into the main topic we wanted to get into tonight, was talking about the StockX $1 billion valuation. Yeah, I don't know. It's insane. You guys wanna start it out?
I mean, I saw the news and you sent it over to me. I think that, I mean, it's crazy. It seemed like it happened really quickly. I mean, relatively quickly, at least. The StockX is still pretty new. The format of purchasing sneakers is pretty new. And, man, it made $1 billion off of resale. So, I mean, I don't really have much to say about it, but more congratulations to Josh and the gang over there, because that's a heck of a achievement. Most people don't see billion-dollar companies for many years, and they did it within a couple of years. So good on them, and hopefully they can keep improving on their design and see what's next for them.
Devil's advocate, how are you a billion-dollar company without any stock?
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of companies out there like that now, right?
Right. But, like, you can be and it's evaluated at $1 billion, but like, what is this? Like, it's basically an app. Like, so a service is worth $1 billion. Like, you don't have a big footprint in terms of employees. Comparatively to other $1 billion companies, your stock is completely predicated on culture vultures. No, I'm just kidding. Totally predicated on people buying up stock from traditional retailers and then using you, and you collect. It's just like, it doesn't seem like a sustainable thing. Like, if the sneaker hype has died out and everybody's like, yo, as a culture, we're going to start buying those $3 Filas from Urban Outfitters, screw big business. Like, they would have nothing. Like, if Jordan's completely, it's like the biggest scandal on earth happened to Michael Jordan. Nobody bought Jordans anymore. What would happen to StockX? I think rhetorically we know the answer, maybe, possibly, but like, I don't believe it's $1 billion company. I don't see how that's worth $1 billion. Prove me wrong.
So full disclosure, I used to work for StockX as an employee. I was like the eighth or ninth person to be hired by the company. I moved out to Detroit for a couple years, and I still work for them as a contractor. I'm not, no longer an employee. But I think that what's interesting about, like, the numbers thing is always, you know, kind of interesting, right? Like, part of it is, yes, it's like a press release and they want to put that big number out there to show that they're, you know, the top dog. And I totally understand that. Like, that's kind of normal in the business world, right? But what I think is interesting is that just in like Mike said, right? It's been, I mean, so when I moved to Detroit, it was February or March of 2016, I want to say. And, you know, I don't think the app had launched yet. I'd kind of started working for them slightly before the app launching or the site launching, or right around the time that the site launched. I actually don't remember if the site was up and running yet, but the market itself has kind of always existed. I think that what StockX did, and, you know, obviously, you know, props to Josh and Greg and Dan Gilbert and all the people that were involved from the beginning. Like my buddy, Chris Kaufman, you know, like the four of them from the earliest time on, and my buddy Vegas, like the four or five of them from the very beginning, right? Like, they recognized that there was a kind of missing piece in that secondary market and saw that eBay was the primary place that everybody was buying and selling shoes. And I think what they did really, really well is just kind of level the playing field, in a sense, for the sneaker world, in order to bring in new, you know, people that might not have even bought or sold on eBay before in the sneaker world, and gave them a platform that they could be comfortable on and they could kind of grow with and trust. And for the people that were already selling, StockX just became like another platform that they could sell on, right? Like, you know, if you were reselling on eBay 5, 6, 10 years ago, you're probably selling on eBay, on GOAT, on StockX, potentially at Flight Club, Stadium Goods, you know, all these places, right? Like we talked about before, like the small shops, the sole supremacies that don't necessarily have a massive web presence, but have like a very dedicated community behind them locally. And I think what StockX did really well, and personally, I think is better from a user standpoint than the GOAT app, was just make it simple to kind of to understand that, like, this is how I'm going to cash out, this is how I'm going to sell. And keeping it that simple and keeping that as the focus made it easier to get more and more people on it. As far as the valuation, I mean, I obviously don't know specifics and numbers and that kind of thing of what they're doing, you know, as far as transactions, but I definitely believe that they are on pace to be at that level of a business. They've got a ton of employees. I don't know how many now, but you know, they've grown tremendously, and they've also moved into, you know, obviously multiple categories. So you've got Supreme and Kith and all the streetwear brands on there now, and you've got, you know, Louis Vuitton and Chanel and all the handbags, and you've got all your Rolex and Tag and all the high-end watches. And so, like, I think they brought everything together in a really unique way. I think that there's always room for improvement. I think that those things independently can work much more they can work much better together than they do on the StockX like site or app. But I still think at the end of the day, like, it's an easier, especially if you're selling, which in my opinion is the way you're going to draw people into the secondary market. Like, from what I've read in the past, like maybe 6 months, I think they're estimating, you know, places like NDP, NPD is, and you know, Mashable, New York Times, those kind of places kind of have reported that the secondary market's going to grow for the next like 5 to 8 years, you know, upwards of like $10 billion, you know, and they're looking at it now saying that it's, the secondary market is worth like about $1 billion, which, I mean, that's just an insane amount of people that, I don't think that it's necessarily all people that are trying to resell. I think what it is that we as consumers have changed the way that we purchase, and we think a lot more before we use the product that we're buying. So a lot of us have this nature of, oh, I'm going to get these, but we might get them home and then they might sit in the box unopened for, you know, days, or they might get opened and then you put them on the shelf or put them in the closet and then you don't see it. Or now we have this other thought that's added on top of that of, well, if I wear them, the value goes down. And that's not something that StockX created. That's just something that StockX and GOAT and Flight Club and Stadium Goods like recognized as businesses and were able to say, okay, well, this customer exists, right? Like the collectors of 10, 15, 20 years ago in the sneaker world are, you know, we all know plenty of people. You see it on Twitter every day, people complaining about the resellers and the secondary market and all this stuff. But like the OG collectors from back in the day stopped collecting regular stuff and got rid of it all, and they collect more unique stuff, right? PEs, we've talked about before, the samples and stuff like that, that just when somebody even that pays attention to sneakers day in, day out, like myself, looks at that stuff and is like, wow, that's crazy. I haven't seen that before. That's what people that used to collect massive numbers of shoes, in my opinion, have moved towards. Now, there's still plenty of collectors that collect, like, you know, every colorway of Jordans, right? And I don't think that will ever go away, because the sports nostalgia piece of it, even if, you know, if Jordan does something incredibly stupid and people are like anti-Jordan, I still think people will collect Air Jordans of some kind, because it's almost like Michael Jackson. Everything that came out about Michael Jackson, there's both sides to the story. I don't even have an opinion on it one way or the other, but I still hear Michael Jackson's music played in a ton of businesses. And I think that there's still plenty of people that believe that his musical contribution was much bigger than whatever his personal stuff was going on, not justifying or not even taking an opinion on all of that stuff. And I think Michael Jordan is the same way, right? Like, it would be incredibly hard for me to erase the memories of Michael Jordan and the sneakers and all of that stuff, because it created my career. Like, I mean, the last 15 years of my life has been dedicated to this business in some way, shape, or form. And I can't possibly erase all of those memories that got me so passionately into the business of footwear. So, as far as the billion-dollar evaluation, I mean, I think that it's probably pretty accurate. I don't think that they have, you know, I'm not saying that it couldn't be off a little bit here and there, but like, they don't really have too much to, there wouldn't be too much reason to fabricate that number. And if they're anywhere close to it, like, you know, I don't think that it matters one way or the other. But it definitely sounds better in the, you know, in the New York Times ad. But I think that in reading the New York Times article, and we'll link to it if you haven't read it, it's definitely interesting. I think that Josh's way of thinking around retail and the way that we shop as consumers, and to change that is an incredibly difficult thing to imagine, because we're so programmed. You know, we go to the store, we see a price, and we think that's what the price is. Like that, like, this is hundreds of years of us going in this way, where like,
yeah,
the model itself in saying like, well, it's not worth that because here's the price on, you know, StockX. I can get it for StockX on that for this price. Why would I buy it from you for that? Like, we're not to the point that people have to say, well, you know, okay, I'll price match StockX. But I don't think that that's very far-fetched. And I think that's the part of it that, regardless of the money side, I think the idea and the principle behind it is what's exciting to me still, in that if that could change, it could also, it people look at it as resale, but like, if you look at it from like a business perspective of a Foot Locker or a Finish Line, obviously Foot Locker is partnered with GOAT now, but like, let's take Finish Line. Finish Line partners with StockX, and now all of Finish Line's inventory can be sold through StockX. You don't really care that it comes from a Finish Line. If you want to get something at a discounted price and you can get it for cheap, and you default to shopping at StockX, then that's the best place for you to get it, even if Finish Line is the one fulfilling the order. If you take it the other way, the way that they've done it with like the Ben Baller slides and stuff like that, you know, like, why wouldn't you partner with Complex for ComplexCon, and, or, you know, whoever owns ComplexCon now, partner with ComplexCon for all the merch that's made there, partner with the artists. So put all of the artists' merchandise onto StockX. Like, it can determine a price that's probably going to be higher than what the suggested retail price or what the retail price at the convention is actually going to be. So the artist gets more money, StockX gets a little bit higher of a cut, and they can pay ComplexCon a little bit higher of a cut. That's my theory, at least. I don't know. I mean, I think that it's a very complicated thing, but it's crazy to see how much the secondary market has kind of grown into a world of its own in the past. You know, it's only been 3 to 5 years really since it's gotten like mainstream. I think that, yeah, it existed for, you know, like, if you've been into sneakers, I mean, like, I knew of people selling Jordans in the 90s. There was no market, you know, it was very small. It was like a handful of people, but that's, you know, 25, 30 years ago. So, the secondary market though now is in a really interesting place, because it's becoming something that I think brands and, you know, even like designers, the Yeezys of the world, the Virgils of the world, are having to pay attention to, because it kind of drives so much business and so much energy. Okay, that's the end of my rant.
The record proved me wrong. So,
I completely agree with you. There's so much going on with StockX that, I mean, it's this new way of purchasing things. And I think what people don't realize is, when they're just like, oh, it's just a resale market, is that they don't realize that if you actually do some digging on StockX, when I say digging, I don't mean a lot of like hard research, but you mentioned in what you were saying that you can actually buy things cheaper than you can find the retail stores and for retail prices. If you're not just looking for that particular hyped item, if you're like a little patient, you can find things that are literally something that was, you know, you would expect to be really high priced and find it for a fraction of the cost just by going through the site and knowing how that secondary market works, because it's not what we would call popular in the streets right now or with the culture right now. So it's really the cool thing. I can see how they're making the money, not just from the people spending like thousands of dollars, but from those who are actually kind of doing a research and waiting and being patient and not buying things for retail. Like my perfect example of that is that one of my favorite shoes that I still haven't bought yet is the Zoom Spiridon, but the Stash collaboration. It's literally $80. It was $160 when it came out. I can get it brand new for $80 off StockX. It's just because from being just, you know, patient and not, you know, buying off just like the random reseller or buying it at retail. So, I mean, you're getting a lot of different ranges of customers there. Not only the, you know, super, you know, wealthy who has a lot of disposable income, but you're getting a person who's looking for a deal. So you've covered all your bases and you basically can do whatever you want. And they actually have decent advertising as well. So they're getting their name out there. I've seen advertisements on ESPN during sporting events. They have advertisement during, you know, YouTube videos. So I it doesn't surprise me that they've gotten this valuation. I just wonder if they're, you know, what's the sustainability look like, especially in the, you know, sneaker market. Cause you know, sneakerheads are fickle of what they like and don't like. So we'll see how that plays out. But I mean, they've clearly done a good job at covering their bases for anybody who wants a pair of sneakers or watch or handbag.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, so one of the things, and I wasn't trying to like prove you wrong by any means, Robbie, I just kind of going off on my own tangent there, but so if you use StockX, which I'm going to assume most people listening to this have used or at least look at StockX. So you go to the site, you know, go to sneakers, you click your size 13, whatever, then you hit below retail. There's so many shoes on there that are what I would say are a great price compared to what maybe retail is or compared to what you think it actually costs. And I think that's the key to the longevity of the business. Like if you go onto the site right now, like I'm just like looking real quick, a size 13, right? You can find, you know, those new Undercover Daybreaks below retail, Pharrell Human Race, you know, HU and NMDs below retail. A lot of the Jordan ones that weren't like super crazy, even the black toe lows, like below retail, $86. I mean, that's a shoe that like for $86, I would consider buying. If I were to come across it in the store, like that's probably going home with me. You know, like even like if you wanted a new pair of New Balance 990s, like $120, you're going to save like $60-$80 on that. And I think that's the interesting thing. Like, I mean, in my size, like OG Ultra Boost for $164, like I should probably just get another pair because I love that shoe. I think that the craziest part about it is the possibility for the below retail stuff. Now, as far as the business goes, you know, like they need to make sure that they're making a certain percentage. And I'm sure they have that calculated out as to like what makes sense for the business. But even if they lose money for the next 5 years and become the default place that people shop for bargains in sneakers, there's a ton of money to be made, in my opinion. And they right now almost always have close to or the best price on the market for most things because of the way the site is set up and people lowball each other and people undercut and drop their prices. And then what I was most amused by when I worked there, even from the very beginning, is that a lot of times what happens is, let's say Mike and I are selling a pair of shoes and we're stepping one down, dollar down. We've come down at, you know, $20-$30. It's not necessarily somebody coming, like, us dropping the price to somebody like to sell. It's actually another third party that comes in. Like Robbie comes in and goes, I got Ultra Boost for $150. What's up? And then that person buys for 150, and now Mike and I are stuck with pairs at 165 or whatever the price we were trying to get was. So that's the kind of interesting thing about, you know, like to your point about the commercials and the growth, the more they are able to expand that kind of what I would call their resources in terms of people that know they exist, that know that they could possibly sell their shoes or whatever product on the site, the less they have to worry about the business of sneakers being popular, because there's always going to be people looking for deals. And as long as they can get both sides of that business, like obviously, you know, this weekend's a great example. Jordan 1s, those Off-White Air Force 1s that just came out yesterday, day before in Chicago, and another pair of Yeezy 700s, right? So all that stuff may or may not flip for a little bit more than retail or really close to retail. If you're an employee and you got it for a discount, or if you're a store owner and you got it for wholesale, there's a no reason why you shouldn't fill all the bids and just cash out to sell the shoes, because if you leave them sitting in store, you might lose money on them because you might have to discount them down the road. So it's a really, really interesting place for all of this stuff. I'm excited to see it. And honestly, I'm like stoked for them to get that like next round of funding, because it just means that they're going to continue to evolve into whatever they're really going to become. And, you know, for me, like it's definitely right up there with eBay in terms of where I'm searching to find old shoes, discounted new shoes, all that stuff.
Good point. Cause like the Yeezy Boost 700, for example, like you just said, most of those are having a hard time selling over $300. So they're either right around retail, or maybe $20 less. So a great option there. I'm not hating on it. I was just skeptical.
Yeah, and rightfully so. You know, I think part of all of these business models for, you know, StockX or GOAT, where you're shipping a shoe or you're buying from something unseen, it's tough to live up to the expectation of customers as that business. And even though, you know, for every 100 shoes that StockX or GOAT sells, there's, you know, maybe 3 to 4 that have errors, maybe 5 on a bad day. Like that's still those 5 are guaranteed to be the noisiest on social. They're guaranteed to be the most problematic. Like, you know, it's kind of like, it's a representation, you know, I think of society right now, right? You go on Twitter and it's probably 90% negative or, you know, questionable. And the reality is there's hundreds of millions of us in the United States that are like living our life and had a good day today. I'm not saying that everything is perfect. I'm just saying that like we're in a time where the noisiest of things gets the attention, and the noisiest of people gets the attention. And that's a really tough spot to be in for businesses, because, you know, you're, as a business, regardless of whether you're a StockX or, you know, Wendy's, you're trying to make a profit for the people that are investing money in you. And that's a really tough thing, because now you got to make sure that, you know, if you have like Wendy's is a funny example, because like if you have a snarky Twitter comment, like as they usually do, right, that might offend somebody to the point that they're going to call up some, you know, executive and try to get a hold of somebody and start a whole anti-Wendy's campaign. And, you know, I, you know, it doesn't really matter if it's justified or not, because the nature of people on the internet now is to kind of just follow that first complaint, energy, whatever, and run with it. I think that the authentication stuff is always going to be challenging, because I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about the show before that we started recording, but that part is one of those things where if you trust it and are willing to spend the money to have authentic shoes, that's great. Personally, I don't even know that I would trust anyone. I mean, I don't know if I'd trust like Kanye to authenticate his own Yeezys right now. I don't think I would trust Travis Scott to tell me if his Jordan 1s were legit. That's how crazy the, you know, fake market is. And I just, that to me is something that I don't think that, you know, I think a StockX or a GOAT or, you know, any of the in-person stores, can do a pretty good job at it. But if the brands don't address it, then it's always going to be this kind of really gray area where you're never really going to know what's going on, if it's real or not.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really tough with that stuff right now.
Yeah. I mean, there's some stores, like I know Index does like free authentication of anything you bought from other places. And I trust them because I know that they touch a lot of them and they always post when they get fake ones. So like, I know that they've caught a lot of fakes and still a lot of reels. So like, it is ultimately still playing odds, but I think the odds are in my favor at that point.
Yeah.
Like, we've never checked every size of an off-white blazer and know, like, not just the size differences, because every size is mateable, not made differently, but things fall differently from a size 8 to a size 13. And they can spot, I don't know how they do it. This, I trust someone who is in the trenches a lot.
Yeah, I think
it's a hard job, man.
Definitely. And I think that it's something that, you know, if you think about it from like, let's say, you know, the three of us live in cities where sneakers are pretty prominent and it's pretty easy to get a second opinion from someone we trust. Yeah. And I think that when it comes to people that don't live in big cities, that live in, you know, middle America or outside the you know, in a city or town that doesn't have a resale shop or doesn't even have a sneaker shop, it's kind of like we talked about before, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, right, where we're talking about Foot Locker and how the people at the Foot Lockers or the Finish Lines don't even have the knowledge or expertise that they once had because they're there for, you know, just to have a hookup. You know, if I'm from like small town, middle of nowhere, and I go in and that's my only store, like that person probably hasn't seen, you know, a pair of off-whites in person. So you can't really trust them to the full extent. Maybe if you have a relationship with them and like, this is my guy, I always go to kind of thing. And I think, you know, personally, I would always suggest that because at the end of the day, a retail store is only going to have to go through, let's say on a good day, they have 100 people come through the door asking about a pair of shoes to be authenticated. But a store like, or an online platform like StockX or GOAT, I mean, they're probably doing thousands a day, or at very minimum hundreds a day. But like that, it's so much easier to have the shoe in person with you, be able to talk through the differences, pull up things online and compare it. When the businesses are running at full speed, things are going to fall through the cracks. It's the same way that things happen with Nike, where people, you know, order a pair of, you know, infrared sixes and end up with PSG sixes or something. Like all that weird stuff constantly is happening where somebody gets shipped the wrong stuff. And I think that's always going to happen just because at the end of the day, businesses are always going to have people that work in those roles that, you know, it's tough to have people that are 100% on point and passionate about what they're doing when you're trying to pay them the least amount of money you possibly can. And that's just business in general is kind of unfortunate in that sense.
Yeah.
I look at it almost like you guys mentioned it both, like having somebody locally you can kind of rely on to you know, give that with the legit check that also authentication of the sneakers. It's just like buying a used car. You bring your mechanic with you to see it, make sure it works. Yeah. Check it out. It's just that same concept, but he's like, hey, you know somebody who knows about sneakers in the sense of like very in-depth detail, they can tell you if it's fake or not. I don't see any harm in that, and I would assume it may be a pain. I don't know. I honestly haven't bought the StockX, but I assume if you were able to give with someone a customer service and hey, let them know that this is fake, it may be a bit of a tedious process, but I'm sure that they would go ahead and, you know, respect that and, you know, let you return it. I don't see why not. I mean, again, I've never bought from them. I don't know that process, but I'm sure they at least give you the accommodating list to you.
Yeah, and I think you make a great analogy with the mechanic thing, right? Like, if you're buying an Acura, you wouldn't take a BMW mechanic to look at it. And I think the same thing can be true in sneakers, right? Like, thinking about, you know, Index that you mentioned in Portland, Robbie, like, they probably have more knowledge of more exclusive stuff and PEs than most places because they're so close to where all of it happens. Like I would never claim to be an expert in that stuff. Like now, if you wanted to try to show me like Reebok questions, Tiffany dunks, stuff that I'm super passionate about, I'm pretty confident that I could, you know, probably get 99 out of 100 right calling them, you know, real or fake. But I think that that kind of goes to the point of like finding spots, people, whatever that is locally that you can trust, that you can bounce those thoughts off of. And even, you know, Instagram, Twitter accounts, you know, the accounts that have, you know, it's different when, you know, you're millions of followers on StockX, nobody's going to be able to like help you out through a DM on Instagram. But if you have people that you're following that are, you know, a few thousand followers, then that person might give you a little bit more time and try to help you, you know, look through the differences or whatever. So,
yeah.
The cool thing is like, there's a ton of, you know, spots that are out there that I think in this secondary market that can help people kind of, figure out what's real and what's not. And honestly, that's something I wanted to put out both to you guys and to anybody listening, like what are the best spots? Like what I would love to know, I would love to like start a list of all the, you know, secondary markets, resale stores, because I just think it'd be cool for people to be able to like to help people hunt down the stuff that, you know, we know exists. We know it's sitting on a shelf somewhere, but we just don't know the name of the store to call to get it.
Yeah.
Well, so like my last parting note on that is like, you're only as good as your last sale. So if you sell something fake with the internet, it's going to get out there. So you have to be on your game to ensure those type of things don't happen to your business if you're a secondary market. Like StockX can take that heat. Like they can take a shoe coming. Like I know I Love Swoosh posted like last week or 2 weeks ago, his Travis Scott onesie bought off of StockX or like Super Crease and like worn, not Super Crease, but worn enough to where somebody had a photo shoot in them inside somewhere. So like they weren't dead stock how most people, myself included, would call a shoe dead stock. They can get away with that. But they're moving so much volume. Like a quote unquote mom and pop store needs to have 100% success rate because their consumers are going to be looking to come back to them. And if they get burnt once, they're going to look to go somewhere else quick.
Yeah, yep. I would agree.
That's true, man. I agree with that 100%.
All right. So we kind of ran over, but I think before we get out of here, anything on your guys' radar for this weekend?
Only thing I can kind of say, I think we've all probably mentioned it before, but only thing that's kind of piqued my interest is the React 270 they released this weekend. And man, I've been hearing good things about it. It looks super comfortable. So that's on my radar, I guess.
So I'm still on not buying any Jordans till the cool gray fours. But as a whole, I'm going to try to lay off and to start buying more coveted things in my life. So I'm chilling on shoes right now.
There you go. Ain't
nothing
wrong with that.
Yeah.
Nick, what about you?
You know, I'm probably gonna try to get a pair of those Freak ones and that that orange colorway if they come out this weekend. I can't remember which colorway drops this weekend, but if the orange
ones, I think
ones,
both. I think it's the black and white ones and the orange ones.
If the orange ones come out, they're definitely, that's definitely on my list. If it's just the black ones, I'm gonna pass for a little while until I can get the orange ones, probably, but.
Dude, yeah. If you get them, let me know how they feel. Because, like, in hand is one thing, but I'm sure on foot it's a completely different story. So let me know how that goes.
I mean, it's more your fault that I want them because you're like, nah, they're not, they don't feel right. So now I'm, like, more curious about it than ever. Because at first I was like, all right, I think the design is okay. But then you're like, eh, it's not worth it. Or it didn't feel right. Now I'm like, damn, I gotta see these things.
Hey, man, you let me know. I hope you prove me wrong. I hope you do.
Me too.
All right. Well, we appreciate all of you listening, and especially the people that stuck with us all the way to the end. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. My name's Nick Engvall. You can find me at Nick Engvall on all platforms or at Sneaker History on all platforms. And let them know how they can find you guys.
Yeah, guys, this is Mike Guillory. You guys find me on Sneaker History. Find me on Instagram and Twitter under MadWatcher789. And just appreciate you guys' time and sticking with us through it all. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you can find me at RAHBEE702. And yeah, everybody, you rock. Thank you so much for listening.
Cool, cool. All right, we'll catch y'all next time. Thanks for listening. Peace.
See ya.
Bye.
What up, y'all? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I want to ask a few favors of you. First off, if you're still listening, I wanted to thank you for supporting us and continuing to listen to our podcast. If you're enjoying it, and I'm going to assume that you do if you're listening this long, please take a couple of minutes, head over to iTunes, drop us a review, leave a comment, make sure you're subscribed. It's the only way that we can really continue to grow our audience and reach new people and continue to grow the podcast. Second thing is, if you haven't already, head over to sneakerhistory.com/shop. You can pick up t-shirts, coffee mugs, stickers, and some other miscellaneous things. And all of these things go to help us continue this podcast, to continue the site, and just pay for miscellaneous expenses that come up. We're not trying to make a killing off of it, but it would be awesome to have your support. And who knows, maybe run into one of you on the streets one day rocking a Sneaker History t-shirt. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time. Peace. Hey, hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly 2 decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you. And we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.